Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Okay. Here we are again. How you doing, Reg? Good? Good, good. All right. Let's go. You all set? Let's go. Let's no lollygagging today. Let's go. Chop, chop. Okay? Put in the book, 415. Out of my brain on the 415. You don't understand that reference. No problem. Anyway. Okay, you ready? Finger on the trigger finger. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, it's your duty, it's your responsibility, it's your inalienable right to get out there, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And why the heck isn't it theirs too? Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you hear, of course, you go to WGNradio.com. Go to the podcast section. You hit the prompt for this podcast. And you will be overwhelmed and overstimulated when you see just how much content is under that little click, one little click. And there's all this content suddenly. There's just one little line that says, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And then you click that, and all of a sudden there's a whole new world. There's more things to click on, more things to listen to. Hundreds of more. After all, this is episode number 415. So, I discovered something without really looking for a discovery about it. We always learn things about ourselves. Hopefully we do. Hopefully we're not the same people we were when we were 10 or 17 or 25 or 35 or 45. I'll stop there. I could go farther. but hopefully we are on a constant learning journey. I know that word is grossly overused. Everybody has a journey now. People have a creative journey, a weight loss journey, a health journey, a relationship. Everybody's on a journey. And it's true. To some extent, we are on a journey. But there's way too many journeys. I think it's safe to say, I don't think you should have 17 different journeys. I think it's okay to say I'm on a life journey. And within that journey, there are several detours and side roads. But I think that life is the journey. These little niche, whatever you want to use, journeys are a little overdone. We need to put labels, and we need to put not just labels, but hyperbolic labels on everything we do. I'm on social media, right? Look, I'm doing this right on a weekly basis. I'm talking about different things. I understand there's a certain arrogance and ego about this, to think that people would want to listen to me talk for an hour about anything. I get that. I'm giving you that. But I find it amazing how some people on a daily basis, and I just get these things through my Facebook feed, for instance. It's not like I go traveling around. I post things, but I'm not really someone that then goes out onto the Facebook world or on the Instagram world and reads and follows. And if I see something in my feed, I will maybe like it or so, especially if it's a friend of mine. But I don't have a regular routine every day of following people and seeing what they're up to. Just not that I don't care. I'm not trying to be mean. It's just that, you know, we all have our lives to lead. We all go about our business. And I think if there's something interesting that day or that week, I think it's great to share that. But some people every day share a litany and a breakdown of everything they do. Got up, washed my face, passed gas. I mean, my gosh, every detail. And it's like everything that they've done is like climbing Everest. I do a lot of things during the day. I don't journal them. I don't list them and share them. Hey, I did this, 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 and this. I'm not looking for gold stars every day. I mean, look, if people need that kind of validation, I understand that we're in a different world now. There's different generations, and they need that validation. They got that validation in spades when they were kids. They were pumped, overly pumped with positivity, and their self-esteem was boosted beyond any kind of realistic type of level. So now they're adults, and they're still craving that. They got that, and that's where we are today. We can bemoan it, and an older generation say what's going on, but that's the way it is, whether we like it or not. So you can either partake in it, or you can just go about your business. I go about my business. As I said, when I'm on Facebook, I will certainly post different things, but most of it has to do with activities that I'm doing that I want people to know about, or I've created little special features. Like I do this Elton Jim's jam-packed iPod, which, I mean, the iPod now is kind of an outdated device. When I started it in 2015, it wasn't. The iPod was still a cool thing. Over the last almost 10 years now, the iPod is pretty much gone by the wayside. So now I keep it named like that as almost like a nostalgic kind of thing, as a retro thing. And I certainly post the links to this podcast three times a week just for people to have easy access to it. If I go on a vacation or if I'm doing a play or something, but it's not like, oh, look what I did today. I went to the grocery store and then I did this and then I did this and then I did that. Wow. Okay. That's called living. We all do that. But, you know, once again, if people enjoy sharing that, if they need that connection, I have no problem with that. I don't feel the need to do that, but it does seem like, well, we just love to share every bit of everything we do, and everything we do, we make it sound as if it's a major accomplishment, and we're almost looking for validation or looking for that gold star, like, well, you had a good day today, and you need people to validate that. It's called living. That's the way I look at it. And as I said, I do like the journey metaphor, but not. I don't think you should be on 17 different journeys, because then how, where are you ever going to get? We're on one journey that takes us on many side trips, But there's one journey. Journey to the center of the earth. Right? There's a goal there. So, but everybody's on a journey. But I wasn't discovering this journey, but it hit me after I did a few couple of things a couple of weekends ago. It hit me, and I was like, you learn something about yourself. I think that's important on your journey. We should always learn things about ourselves, negatively or positively. We certainly like to have more on the positive side than the negative side, but the negatives will also help you. The positive ones will keep you working and keep you moving forward, but the negative ones will oftentimes be the most important ones and the ones that maybe affect the most change and help you most, because we all are flawed. I've said that many times. Every one of us is flawed. No matter who you are or what you are or what you've done or who you want to be or what you will be, we are all flawed human beings. And so the more we can learn from others, but more importantly, I think the more that we can learn from ourselves. And to me, that means every so often taking a step back and analyzing, and maybe there's a new lesson, and then you can determine was this a good lesson about myself that I just realized, or is it a negative one that maybe I need to work on in my journey? But when it was happening, it was just another item on my list. I've said many times here on the podcast that. I love lists. I love to make lists. I love to work on lists. And the best part of making a list is when you finish a task on that list. And when you finish all the tasks, I shouldn't say there's no greater feeling. There's a lot of other great feelings. There's a lot of good feelings in this life, right? But for me, one of the best feelings on a daily basis, instead of that validation from the outside world, from likes and views on and whatever I may have shared on social media, I get the most satisfaction from my own personal list that only I see and only I execute and only I get to mark off. Oh, there's nothing like just putting a line through one of those tasks that you have on your daily or weekly list. And when you have completed them, or, hey, I don't even know what your process is or what your format is. My format is a line through it. I make little lists on Post-its notes, small writing there, pretty much for the week. I have my week pretty much worked out. Got my daily planner for things that may be coming up in terms of prearranged things, doctor's appointments, things like that, events, whatever it is. So that's there. I look at the daily planner. But then as life happens on a daily basis, somebody's coming over to fix a fence, or I've got to get the car fixed, or whatever it is. Things pop up during the week. Got to pick someone up. Bup, bup, bup. The list comes. What's tomorrow? Okay, well, I got this. I've got some standing things I've got to do. Hey, record the podcast. Bup, 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 bup. Send the podcast. All these different things. And then the things of life fill in those blanks. And there's nothing better than when you've got a full day's worth of errands or projects to do, and you just nail those off. Ding, 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 ding. Now, as I said, I am more of a fan of the line through the list on my little Post-it note list, which I carry with me. I don't have a wallet. I have a small little pouch type of thing. I don't even know what they call them, to be honest with you. That holds my identification and my credit cards and my license and things like that. And then it's got like a little magnetic, snap on it too, to hold things. And that's where I stick my list in. So my list is always with me all the time. So if I'm out on the road and I'm, I take a look. Oh, wait a minute. I have to stop at the grocery store too. I've got to stop, blah, 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 whatever it is. So the list is always with me. And when I get home then, I just love to go, okay, did that. Oh, nothing better. At the end of the day, to have three or four or five things on your list that you want to do that day, whether they are exciting, fun things or just responsibilities you have to do, obligations, whatever they may be. But it's nice to me to have that list and then to know that these were the things that I planned to do, that I had to do, that I had responsibilities to do, and I did them. Oh, nothing better than to look at that list at the end of the day and see all the crossouts. And then there's another one just waiting there, another list right below that with tomorrow's. I do it like a week out. And, of course, things will come up. Things will change. I have to either add things to the little list or the post-it note is so small, so I redo it. I go through a lot of post-it notes, folks. You want to give me a good Christmas present? A stack of post-it notes. I could use those. I spend a lot of money on post-it notes. Now, I should say that there's also another format for, instead of the crossing out, which to me it's cathartic because, it's first of all, you're drawing that line from left to right, and then it's crossing it out. It's putting it away. It's blurring it. Now, you could use the check mark, right? You could use the check mark. But to me, the check mark doesn't eliminate it from the list as boldly. When that line is through it, it's done. It's gone. There's no delete button on my post-it note, but if there was a delete on my post-it note, that would be it. That line through it is pretty much the equivalent of the delete button. The check mark, it sends the same message, but I don't think it doesn't boldly tell you it's done. About a year or so ago, maybe not that long ago, we went to some event. It was a charity event. There was a, and I'm not even sure why they did this, but it was a trivia charity event, and at each table, they had a small little, message board with a marker. You know those kind of little message boards with the erasable marker. And each table had one. I wasn't sure why. I'm trying to figure out why they gave us. I don't know if we were supposed to write something. Maybe we wrote something and showed it to somebody, or I don't know what we did with it. But when the event was over, they were just sitting there. And I'm like, they're probably just going to throw these out. They weren't that expensive. They were very thin, little cardboard with the little white front on it that was all slippery. And then it's got the erasable marker. In fact, what's kind of cool about it is the eraser is on the back of the marker, the pen, and there's a little holder for that. So I was like, well, this is kind of neat. So, they were just sitting around there, so I took one. I'm like, this might be nice to have as a little message board around the house. And so I put that up now, and it's been on the refrigerator for about, 6 or 7 or 8 months. And there are some little things, because a lot of times if you leave the house, I'm leaving the house and say my wife is busy or something, and I'll leave a note like on a chair, say she's upstairs or she's somewhere else or she's busy, that I don't want to need to bother her. I'm just going to go out for a second and go somewhere. So I'll write, went to store, went to here, blah, 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 So I was like, once again, I'm wasting all these post-it notes. I'm already using all my post-it notes for my daily list, and now I'm wasting them here And I was like, well, this not might be a bad idea. Put the little message board on the refrigerator. It's a magnet on there. And this way I could have like two or three regular things I do. And here's where I use the check mark process. So if it's like store or health club or whatever, I have now written that. And then I have a little box. I draw a little box. And then if I went to the store, for instance, I will check the box. So now that check doesn't mean I finished that. See, this is a very complex process here. Boy, I can't even believe how involved this is. But so with my little mini list, I use the crossout method. But if I'm sending a message to my wife, for instance, to say I went to the store, then I use the check mark in the small box. So if she comes downstairs or something, looks around, where is he? She looks on the refrigerator. Oh, he went to the store. Check mark. Store. There you go. And then what's nice about that is when I come home, then it's erasable, and I erase the check mark, remake the box, and it's ready for the next time. So the check mark actually can have two meanings. That's why I think it is important to use maybe this cross-out line for my personal list and the check mark for the where am I list. Wow, this probably sounds scary to you, doesn't it? But for me, it's just another day. Then, of course, the check mark drives me crazy because my wife is a lefty. Now, I don't know, I never realized how right-handed centric we are. We are a right-handed centric world. Most people are right-handed. I don't know if you've ever heard those stories. I don't know if I'm sure they don't do it anymore because we're in such an era of self expression and freedom and regardless of whatever kind of progressive world we're living in, this to me was pretty regressive, if you will, and oppressive. There were times, and this is not that long ago, even in my lifetime, when I was in grammar school, when we were learning to write, I went to Catholic grammar school. And from what I understand, I mean, this went on for a long time. That's how right-centric we are. If little kids started in grammar school, elementary school, started to, when they first started to learn how to write in school, if the nuns saw that a kid picked up the pen with his left hand, they would many times take that pen out of the left hand and put it in the right and say, learn how to use the, you have to be right-handed. I mean, wow. If your natural inclination, for whatever reason, whatever makes us righty or lefty, whatever that inclination is, it seems to be a natural one. Yes, you can learn, I guess the kids did learn how to do it, especially at that young age, but there was this sense of uniformity. Everybody needs to be right-handed. And I didn't realize the plight of the left-hander. There are quite a few. I talked to my wife and she's like, well, I can't do that. I'm left-handed. I'm always like, rolling my eyes. But then when she explains what it's like being a lefty in a right-handed world, I go, wow, being right-handed, it doesn't even occur to me. But then she says, well, because of this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, it's been devised that way because it fits a right-handed person. And the lefty is always kind of fitting in to a right-handed world. But I didn't realize that the left-handed writing style also affects check marks. Who would have thought that? I thought a check mark was a uniform, regular thing. A check mark is a check mark. As far as I'm concerned, the check mark starts and the tail of the check mark that goes up goes to the right, right? Now, once again, where does it go? To the right. The right. Because I'm right-handed. And most of the world is right-handed. And so when you see a check mark, the expectation is that that's what a check mark looks like. The standard check mark is got that little down thing, and then the tail of it goes up and to the right, correct? Yeah. But that's not the way lefties do it. Lefties have, which makes sense. The lefties, you know, when we're writing in that check mark, that feels very natural if you're a righty to have your hand then move to the right. You're right-handed. It's a natural thing. Well, for the lefty, it's going to the left makes sense. So the check mark goes the opposite direction. Drives me crazy. When I see her check marks, I erase her check marks. And I'm just as bad as the nuns, I guess. Because when I see her check mark in a communal place, like on the official little whiteboard on the refrigerator, if, for instance, she goes out somewhere and she puts a little check mark where she went, so if I come home and she's not there or something like that, her check mark is the opposite direction. Drives me crazy. I actually, now it's her, it's just the two of us in this house, right? Nobody is seeing this thing. This is not an official board. I don't know how official this board is, but in my mind, this is the official board. And so it should look, and here's that word again, it should look right. And so when she makes her, in my mind, when she makes her backward check mark, I have to erase her backward check mark and then make the correct right check mark. Even though, who cares? She sent her message to me. She's at the store. She made the check mark, but I'm so anal about this. It's like, well, that check mark looks crazy. Even though it doesn't matter. It's just the two of us here. Her message is sent. Communication was 100% executed there. But in my mind, so programmed to what a check mark looks like that, well, that can't stay there. Even though it won't stay there. Because once I've seen that she said she went to the store, then I don't need that check mark there anymore. I can erase that check mark and make the new little box. But in my crazy mind, I erase her check mark, put a correct, or in my mind, what is the correct style of a check mark with the tail going to the right. Then I'll leave it there for maybe 5 minutes, and then I'll erase the whole check mark and put a new box anyway, and the box is empty. Whoa, yes, I know. I realize not only how crazy I sound, but how crazy I probably am. I get that. Now, I did not in any way, shape, or form expect to be talking about check marks and and being right and left-handed at all. That's not my topic today. I don't even know how I got here. But once again, as I said before, this podcast is a journey. And every so often we take little side trips, but the main thrust of it is the topic. And every so often on this podcast journey, we take little side trips. And that certainly was a side trip. I'm not even sure how I got there. I talked about lists. I talked about doing things during the day and learning lessons about yourself. That's what I want to talk about. So on my list, we'll get back to that. Last weekend, or a couple weekends ago now, I had a couple of things I just had on my regular list. And they happened to happen on a whole weekend, on a Saturday and a Sunday. So on a Saturday, April 20th, in fact, every day is a day. I was watching some show the other day. I mean, that's National Pizza Day. It's National, Ingrown Toenail Day. I mean, I don't know. I was watching a program. They were talking about a salon that knows how to, that just specializes on cutting curly hair, especially women that have curly hair, because there's an art to it. And then I realized as I was watching this little segment on a show that there's a National Curly Hair Day. Oh my gosh, are we out of our minds here? National Curly Hair Day? It's March 16th, by the way. I looked it up. But so if you have curly hair, I hope on March 16th you didn't straighten it, you didn't flatten it, you just let your curls fly free on March 16th. If you have naturally curly hair, what was the Charlie Brown character who had my naturally curly hair? But yeah, we have natural curly hair day. Wow. But you know, there's a day for everything. Well, this was Record Store Day, which was created about maybe almost 10 years ago now, before the big vinyl revolution. There's a vinyl revolution going on in the record business world. Now, when I was a kid, back in my day, we didn't have vinyl. We bought records and we liked it. We loved it. Yeah, we didn't call it vinyl. They were vinyl records. We knew that, but they were records. They weren't vinyl. Now there's pieces of vinyl, and I buy vinyl, and I'm a fan of vinyl, and it's records. This is, I said before, we today's society, we have to label things and give them prominence and give ourselves prominence for being associated with it. I'm a vinyl collector. So not only is the vinyl word pretentious, but now I'm even doubling on the pretentiousness by saying that I am a vinyl collector. I am a part of the vinyl world. We used to go out and buy records. We had a record collection, or we had a bunch of records. We didn't have a vinyl collection. We didn't have pieces of vinyl. Anyway, so Record Store Day was created in, I would say, about maybe 2013 or so. I believe it was actually in the UK. I don't even know if it originated here. It was a way for and at that time, the struggling local and independently owned record stores to generate some business. The record store, as we knew it, was becoming obsolete with the rise of the digital and the downloading. You know, it started with Napster and then it went into the Apple Store and downloading and Spotify and all these other things. The brick and mortar record store, which was a foundation of the record business, was becoming both extinct or obsolete, or both. Especially that local record store that we all had, I think. If you were a music fan, you always had your favorite record store. And that's all it was. Now, don't get me wrong. I used to buy, when I was a young kid, I used to buy my records not only at a record store, but when I first started to buy records, I bought them in the record department of a bigger store, like a Sears or a Goldblatt's or a Key department store, things like that. They used to always sell records. Some places had really nice record departments in department stores, and some just had it there as an obligation. They weren't very, you know, committed to it until the 80s when the record world really exploded. And then there became big franchise like Music Land and things like that that were just, not only were they record stores, but they were franchised record stores. Peaches was a big one. Tower Records, things like that. But it really started as small mom and pop businesses. And as more people were downloading their music. So once again, not going into the store and buying anything physically tangible that you could touch. But then we also had the rise of the big box stores, your Best Buys and your Walmarts. And they would have huge record departments in their stores because they had great buying power. And so those people that still were going to buy hard copies, whether it was an album of vinyl or at least over the last 20 years, still CDs, they would go to their Target or their Walmart or their Best Buy, and that's where they would shop. They wouldn't go to the small, independently owned record stores. And so this once kind of vital part of the record experience was going away. And so those in the business said, let's try to help this segment because it's going away and we think it's important. And cooperation with musical artists and with record companies, the whole idea was to create some exclusive record store day only releases that could only be purchased from a local smaller record store on that day. There was limited amounts that were created or pressed. They were distributed around the country or around the world in many cases. Very scarce. And so the idea was to generate some excitement and some interest and to get people physically in that store. Now, what happened as a nice coincidence was at the same time that this was devised, this whole idea of a vinyl resurrection with a younger generation sort of occurred at the same time. Young people who only grew up with digital recordings, certainly CDs, but as most of them were going on and just downloading, and they weren't even touching a CD anymore. The CD now is pretty much gone the way of the dinosaur. I mean, sadly, music has become very disposable because of its convenience. And so there was a generation that looked back and maybe they saw their parents or even their grandparents' records and said, wow, this is kind of cool. Yes, it's a little antiquated in terms of today's high-tech, high-speed convenience world, but there's also something very tactical about it and tangible about it. The album cover art, the placing of the album on the turntable, the placing of the arm on the vinyl album. There was a whole experience that went into that. Now, when we were doing it 40, 50 years ago, we didn't think of that as a cool experience. It was what you did. It was how you did it. It only comes with time and history and nostalgia and technology advances that we get this warm, fuzzy, nostalgic view of how, the way we used to do things, because now we don't do it that way. And then we realize, well, that was kind of a neat experience. But in the time, all we were doing was what you do. You go to the record store, you go in the bins, you go through with your fingers, you look at the albums, you buy an album, you bring it home. Many times you did it with your friends. You go down in the basement, or you go into your room, and you put the album on, you listen to it together, you look at the album cover, you look at the lyric sheet, and it's a whole day. It's a whole experience. Now, once again, I don't think we wrote that down on our lists. I don't think I had lists when I was 10. Oh, that would have been scary if I had lists like this that I have now when I was 10. But we just did it. But now in retrospect, it's like because that aspect of it is gone so much so. Yes, I mean, people still, I'm sure, sit around, teenagers still sit around, you know, in their rooms with their song and either on their computer or on their phones and they're playing it. I'm sure there is still something about holding the album, looking at the album, processing the album, turning the album over. Yes, it's less convenient. There's a difference in sound. It skips, it hisses. It's not easy to go from one song to another. It's not easy to play a song over again on repeat 10 times. You can't do that. You got to keep getting up and doing it if you want to do it. There's downsides to vinyl. Don't get me wrong. You know, it was an imperfect process, but that's what it was. Now that is because we have advanced. And as I said many times here, you know, we love convenience. What technology has done has made listening to music almost effortless. Not that there was a huge effort to go and put an album on a turntable or get up and play the song again. I understand. I mean, these are first world problems. I get it. But if you're into music, you go, oh, well, this is, especially if you never had this, you go, oh, this is cool. And so the retro vinyl resurrection started to trickle down to a younger generation who never really handled records. I spoke to somebody who was 24 years old. I mentioned the term a vinyl 45. He had no idea what I was talking about. No idea. I don't even think he ever saw one. For me, I've got hundreds of them in my house. I live with them. They're a part of my childhood. They're a part of my adulthood. This guy never heard of them. And that's, we're both living in the same worlds here. But it just goes to show you how much and how fast technology has moved us and how much and how fast the culture has changed in 30 or 40 years. So Record Store Day has become this annual event, especially if you're into music, which I am, always have been. When I was a young kid, my mom listened to records. She bought records. She bought them for me. A lot of the records I listened to as a very young kid were probably hers. Then I said, oh, I like that song, either on the radio or a lot of the first albums I had were all soundtracks from movies that I saw, like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Disney films like Jungle Book and the Aristocats and things like that. Because I was seeing those movies and then I was hearing those songs. And then I asked, well, can I get the album? So a lot of my first albums were actually Disney soundtracks from the movies I saw as a little kid. My mom took me to movies. So, you know, it's part of all of, you know, you grew up in a certain time. It was just part of your childhood. So now we've got a new generation that's appreciating it. Record Store Day has become a big deal. And, you know, as I said before, there's exclusive, these are exclusive releases, and there's not a lot pressed for the whole world sometimes. There's only 3,000. And you say, well, that's a lot. Well, it's not when you think about around the world and record shops all around the world. So a lot of times your local record store, and this is done on purpose to generate excitement, to generate interest, to make people excited, anticipatory, want to make sure they mark that day, because if you go, you know how it is, if you go into a store and buy one thing, you might just be browsing around and say, oh, by the way, my gosh, when I go to Target, for instance, I'm not plugging Target for any of the reason, but that's where I go for that kind of stuff. If I go to Target, I think, okay, I have to buy three things at Target, and inevitably I am always buying 7 or 8 or 10. Oh, well, we need these two. Oh, we need these two. So that's the whole idea of Record Store Day. We'll lure people in with these exclusive, hard-to-find, limited edition releases that are only available on this day in these stores. You can't get them at other bigger stores like that. And they could go, depending on the artist and the popularity of it, it could be sold in 5 minutes. It could hang around for 3 years. But if you are a big music fan and you want to, and you want that, you will make sure that you get to that store as early as you can. And then, of course, what happens? We get lines outside. And so suddenly a record store that may, a small independently owned mom and pop record store that may get 2 or 3 people a day, at least on one day, see several hundred people come in. And so people are not only buying that release or those certain releases, you only buy one copy of whatever thing you get of a special record store day release. You can't buy multiple copies, so this way everybody has a chance. Some stores will get 5 copies. Some stores will get 1 copy. It's luck of the draw. So that's why the earlier you get there, they're trying to create this demand, this excitement. They want the lines outside. They want the hubbub. They want to get people back into those stores. And it works. And it's been working. And now it's a whole business. Now, I mean, you know, 10 years or so ago, there were a couple by some big name artists. And a lot of times they weren't even by big name artists. They were by some smaller artists that had like a cult following. But that was enough to start the trend. And then big name artist says, well, wait a minute, everybody's going in there, then I'll do it. So all of a sudden you've got, you know, Bruce Springsteen and The Who and David Bowie and Elton John or whoever. And now it's everybody. There's literally hundreds of record store day exclusive releases now. Albums that were never released. They're specially made. Either they're perhaps live concerts that were recorded, were never released. Now they are. They could be anniversary issues of albums with outtakes or demos or never released albums. Whatever, there might be some never released or hard to find things within any artist's catalog. That's what they do. And it's turned out to be quite a very popular type of thing. And it's an event if you're a record store fan, if you're a record fan. So this year, Elton John is a big record collector himself, and he loves vinyl because he grew up collecting vinyl. He used to listen to his father's 78 jazz records when he was a little kid. He had an extensive vinyl collection, which he auctioned off back in the 80s when everybody was selling their vinyl albums to buy CDs, and everybody had CDs for 20 years, and then all of a sudden the CD was supplanted by the digital downloads, and then CDs became, you know, who wants these? So that's why the whole vinyl explosion is interesting, because vinyl was all but dead. You know, there's a classic Seinfeld episode where Kramer and Newman ask Jerry, this is in the early 90s, do you have any of those old record albums that you don't use anymore that are just taking up space? We'll buy them, and they take them to a used record store. That's the way albums were used. They were looked at in 30 years ago as obsolete, dinosaur, extinct things that were just taking up space. They were remnants of a bygone era 30 years ago. Now, they're hipster and cool. And the CD, which at one time was hipster and cool, is all but extinct. So we'll see what happens. Maybe in 20 years, the CD may come back again. Who knows? But so the vinyl explosion has taken place. So Elton John had put out a special edition of an album that he had in 1974, 50th. Well, it's not. It's a little past the 50th anniversary. Well, no, it is the 50th anniversary. 74, it came out, of Caribou, and which was the album that had The Bitches Back on it and Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. It was a number one album, very popular album. It came out right after Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, so a lot of comparisons were made. In many ways, at least in the Elton world and in other places, it's kind of underappreciated because it was following up this magnum opus, which was Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. But it's a very solid album. It's one of my favorite Elton John albums. There's a lot of deep cuts on there that are some of my favorite Elton John songs of all time. And they made a new expanded version just for Record Store Day, added a whole different new album in addition of the original album. They had made it a double album with some outtakes and some demos and some new mixes. And, of course, then they did it. They put it on blue vinyl, like a sky blue vinyl, which mirrored the album cover's color design. So, of course, I'm a completist. Even though I have the original album, I didn't have some of these demos, and so I had to go and get the 50th anniversary record store exclusive release of Caribou. So here I am at my age, suffice it to say, over 50. What I say now is you know how the demographics go? You know, it's like 18 to 36 and 36 to 54 and then 54. It's like then 55 and over. I love that. I love when you're 55, then you are in a peer group with someone who's 105. You are no longer, you know, in a smaller group of, say, 20-year period. Once you're 55, they're like, okay, you're 55 and over. So when people ask me how old I am now, I just say, and over. I'm just and over. So as somebody who is and over, this was a big deal to me. I had to go and get this. And so here I was at my age and over getting up. The store for Record Store Day, the store that I go to regularly to buy any albums when I do go to Record Store Day, and if I do need to find a vinyl album for whatever reason, I'm still something of a record collector. Not as much as I used to be, not even close. I mean, there was a time in my teens and 20s where I literally went at least two times a week to the record store. Release day used to be on Tuesdays. Now it's changed. But I would usually go on release days, and sometimes in my teens and early 20s, when we were just going around, you know, during the summer, nothing to do, where do you want? Well, we'll just go to the record store. And we would kill a half hour, an hour in there. I mean, that's what I did. And I had friends that were music fans too. So this was, I've been in record stores for many, 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 many years because I am and over in terms of my age. So here I was, store opens at 9. I didn't know what if the demand for the Elton album would be as crazy as other releases. Elton is certainly popular, but now Record Store Day has become such a big deal that newer bands, older bands, unknown bands, heritage bands, legend, whoever it is, everybody seems to have a Record Store Day release. So the odds of people singling in on one release are not as much as they were, say, maybe 10 years ago when there weren't as many special releases. Now there's so many. The net is so wide that I thought the chances, I don't need to get there at 5 in the morning and wait out in line for 4 hours. But I figured an hour and a half, 7:30 is okay. I'll do 7:30. So I get up around, you know, 6:30, take a shower, 7 o'clock, place isn't that far. And I get there at 7:30, and lo and behold, the line is down one street and around a corner and down the other already. And I'm like, holy cow, look at this. I'm not the only crazy one. And I was very interested to see from a social experiment that it wasn't just the Andover crowd, a good representation of the Andover crowd who grew up with vinyl, and many, as I said before, many of the heritage artists had put out Record Store Day albums. But there was a mix. There were teenagers. There were people in their 20s. There were Taylor Swift fans. Three women, girls right in front of me, probably in their early to mid-20s. They were there to get the Taylor album because there's some special Record Store Day thing with the new Taylor Swift album. It ran the gamut, which is kind of cool to see because, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, if you would have said Record Store Day, I'm sure it would have been all older people with gray at their temples or streaks of gray in their hair who were just, you know, old retro vinyl fans. But clearly, this vinyl movement, while it's not overtaking the world, it certainly has a steadily growing interest within the music world. The vinyl album will never sell like it used to. I mean, for instance, Thriller sold 40 million copies. That's not going to happen ever again. We're just, the album will sell 40 million copies, perhaps, but not vinyl hard copy albums, because the majority of people are still in the digital downloading world. Yes, this little vinyl niche is growing, but even if it's growing, compared to what it was, yeah, there's a lot of growth. You could say, well, it's gone up 300% in the last 5 years. Yeah, well, because 5 years ago, nobody was buying vinyl albums. So you buy three and it's, you know, it's 100%. So, you know, so you have to parse, you have to, you know, look at the at these numbers with a little realistic point of view. But there's no question. But from what I saw, just as a casual social experiment, yeah, there's definitely a younger generation that is into vinyl, which is great. Anything that gets people into music, for as far as I'm concerned, is cool. And it was so funny because I was looking at them and thinking to myself, well, that was me 20 or 30 years ago. But here's the lesson I learned. It wasn't me 20 or 30 years ago. It was me today. When I came home, it struck me, I used to go on the first day, whenever there was an album out by one of my favorite artists, they certainly would go to the record store on that day. In fact, one time when Bruce Springsteen's live album came out in 1985, his first official, not bootleg, but his official live set, 75 to 85, I went out there the first day. I bought several copies on cassette and vinyl and CD, and I was interviewed on a TV show, on the news, at Rolling Stone Records in Norwich. I was there on the first day. And I've done that for decades with my favorite artists, whether it's Elton or Bruce or anyone else. So here I was 30, 40 years later doing the same thing, getting up early, standing outside. It was cold that day. It was like 40 degrees. I had a winter coat on, and I was in line for an hour and a half, and I was walking back and forth in my own little space there in my line to keep warm. And I was saying to myself, my God, you know, there's a point when I came home and I said, my God, I'm still doing this. You know, that you think that maybe you grow out of things, but old habits do die hard, especially if it's about something that really is important to you, something that you're passionate about, something that is integral to your life and to your experience. And for me, there's no question that music is that, and record buying and record collecting is that. And so while it would have been one thing if I drove past the line on my way somewhere else, right? As I was driving and I saw this line that went down a street and hooked down another side street, and I drove by and said, oh, today's record store day. That's right. Oh, boy, remember when I used to get up in the morning, or remember when I would go to record store day, release day, or remember when I would go and buy an album? It was that important to me that I would go there on the first day. And now I'm off to do something else. I've outgrown that. That was a part of my youth. I don't do that anymore. Oh, how, ha, ha, ha. Those were the days. But I didn't just drive by and notice it and say, well, that's a part of me that is not there anymore. Here I was doing the same thing that I was doing 40 years ago, getting up early, waiting in line to buy a record, which told me something. Yeah, you know what? Music is important to me. And I'm glad about that. And there's something about the fact that I would get up and still go that says, you know what? I haven't abandoned those things that are important to me. They were important to me when I was a kid, and here I am over the age of, and it's still important to me. I remember when I was buying so many records when I was a young kid, my mom said, why are you buying all these records? You're never going to listen to them. I have all these albums upstairs, which she did, and I found them, and there's some great albums that I still have of hers. But in her generation, that was a whole, that World War II Depression era generation was very different. They had fun. They did what they did. They had a rebellious youth, and they did what, but then they moved into a different shift of life, and they didn't do the things they used to do when they were kids. At least as a whole. Some people did, obviously. But in many of them, it was like, well, that was when I was younger. I used to buy records and listen to records. I don't do that anymore. I'm an adult. I have other responsibilities. And today, I think we still have those responsibilities, but we don't abandon what makes us who we are or what we enjoy doing. And so there was a part of me that when I was getting up and taking a shower and getting up at 7 o'clock and seeing it was cold outside and getting in the car and I could see my breath and I'm waiting in this line and I'm listening to the Swifties in front of me talk about how great Taylor is, and there's a part of me that said, what am I doing here? You know, I was questioning, like, wow, I mean, here I, you know, wow, should I just leave? But I couldn't leave. I didn't want to leave. And when I got my album, I did get it, and I got home, I was glad I went. And it struck me that, wow, I still have that same passion. And I was happy about that. That growing up and getting older didn't mean that I would have to abandon or that it would diminish what I truly did like and that was important in my life. Old habits were hard to break, so I was happy that I got it. Well, then, the next day, if you thought waiting in a line for an hour and a half was a big deal, the next day, I just got up at about 7 o'clock or 6:30 on a Saturday and waited in line for an hour and a half and got my record and came home by 10 o'clock or so on Saturday. And then went out that evening with some friends. And then woke up the next morning on about 4 hours of sleep by the time I got home and got up and got dressed and then went to the airport, got on an 8 o'clock plane, flew to Columbus, Ohio, landed at 10 o'clock Columbus time, 9 o'clock Chicago, went to a hotel at 10:30, checked in, freshened up, threw some water on my face, got what I needed, walked about 7 minutes from my hotel to the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio, and was 97th in line for the general admission pit seating at the Bruce Springsteen concert in Columbus, Ohio, which was the final show of his U.S. leg of this of the spring. Now, there's no, when I say general admission, for the last 10 years or so, Bruce Springsteen has not sold any reserve seats in the first 20 rows or so. There's a general admission pit, which means if you want to be in the first row, if you want to be close to the action, and it's great when you are at a Bruce Springsteen concert, and I've been to over 60 of them, then you've got to get there early because you're going to get in line by first come, first serve. Now, a lot of times they do a lottery system, but you still got to get in line to get your number and your wristband. It's a whole thing. Let me just tell you, it's a whole thing. But the thing is, you got to get there and you got to wait in line. You got to stay there for the most part. So there I was at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock Central. And I am now outside with a number 97 on a marker drawn on my hand. And so I know I'm the 97th person that's going to get in. And the chances are I'm going to get up toward the front, which is exactly what I wanted to do. But now it's 11 o'clock in the morning, and the doors will not open until 6. So that's 7 hours. I've already been up since 4:30. This line and this numbering system, it goes to show you just how committed some people are. This line and this numbering system was not created by the venue in terms of how people will get in terms of when they got in line. The fans themselves created this numbering system, and everybody abided by it. When I got there, I said, what's the process? They said, go to that woman over there with the pink coat. She gives out the numbers. I thought it was somebody from the venue. I get there, it's just a fan. This woman, I thought I was doing a big thing by getting there at 11 o'clock in the morning the same day. This woman, the show was on a Sunday. This woman got there on Thursday. She was in line for the general admission pit on Thursday for a Sunday show. You think I'm nuts? You think I'm committed? You think I'm passionate? When I got there at 11 o'clock, 7 hours before the show start, 7 hours before they let you in, about 9 hours before the show starts, well, 8 hours really, 97, 96 people were there before me. And so I had my 97 drawn on my hand, and now I had to wait from 11 o'clock until 6. Now, in theory, I could have gone back to my room. It was only 5 minutes away, and come back closer to the time, but things were happening. You know, at 1 o'clock, they were going to give away a wristband. At 3 o'clock, they were going to move us somewhere else. At 5:30, they might going to start, you know, putting us in line by numbers. At 6 o'clock, so, you know, what am I going to do? I stayed there. I made some friends. Everybody was a Springsteen fan. We talked. We shared things. It was a little cold. Thank God it wasn't terribly cold. I still had that same winter coat I had the night before. I had some water. I had some Kind bars with me. But I didn't go to the bathroom from 11 o'clock in the morning until I got back to my room at about 11:30, quarter to 12. There was nowhere to go to the bathroom. I guess I could have gone into a store or something, but I didn't. Once I got into the venue and I got my spot right near the stage, great spot, but I couldn't move. If I left, I would have lost it. Once we got in at 6, the show didn't start till about quarter to 8. So there's almost another 2 hours of waiting. And then the show was 3 hours long. So it was pretty much a 12-hour experience just at the venue. You know, then another 7 hours before that, getting up, going to the airport, flying, getting there, bop, bop, boop. And then I had an 8 o'clock flight the next morning. So I only had about 4 hours of sleep before I had to get up and start it all over again. And yes, there were times at 2 in the afternoon and at 3 in the afternoon, and I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I've got another 5 hours. What am I doing here? What am I doing? I'm at this age, I'm and over. Why am I still doing this? I used to do this when I was in my teens and in my 20s. The first time I saw Bruce Springsteen, I was 16 years old. I've been doing this since my teens, waiting out in line for tickets, with bringing lawn chairs and blankets and sleeping overnight outside of the Rosemont Horizon. Or at the Ticketron outside the Sears at Six Corners. I've been doing this for 40-some years. And here I am still doing it. And not just down the street from my house. Now I got on a plane and flew. I'm in a different state, in a different city. What am I doing? Oh, my gosh. There was a part of me that said that as I sat there at 3 in the afternoon realizing this. But then there was but once I got into that concert, and once I stood where I was, and once Springsteen came out and gave this amazing show, there was no place else I wanted to be at that moment than right where I was. And that's a great feeling. There are certain times in your life when you are at the exact place you want to be at that time. If you can pull that off, that's an exhilarating experience. And that's exactly where I was at that time. It took a lot of effort and a lot of hours. Some people might think it's crazy. I think it's crazy. But once again, I said to myself, wow. When I was done, I said, you know what? That was a crazy experience. My legs are killing me. I was literally standing for 11 hours. And yet, I loved it. It was a great concert. It was a great experience. I was so happy I did it. And still am. It was a great memory. And I realized once again, in a day right after I made this realization about the record store day, here I was again doing something that I'd done as a young kid. And it took a lot of effort and time, but it was important to me. I'm passionate about it. It's a part of who I am. Old habits die hard. And once again, I realized, wow. And I looked around, and believe me, as I said, just like at Record Store Day with a whole diverse representation of ages, same thing at a Springsteen concert. There was people my age, people older than me, people much younger than me. It spanned the generations. And the older people, like myself, as opposed to kids in their teens and their 20s, they were doing the same thing I did. Some people had chairs. I didn't have a chair because I wasn't going to bring it on the plane with me. But they stood out there the same amount of time, some even more. The woman that was there from Thursday was an older woman, wasn't some teenage girl or teenage guy, was a long, long, long time fan. So you make these realizations about yourself sometimes. And sometimes you go, what am I doing and why am I doing this? And I thought, you know, I didn't think that at this time of my life and this age, I'd still be doing this. But then you ask, but why not? What does that mean? That's a weird way to look at it. And I've decided to say, no, you know, it's cool that I'm still doing this. That there's still a childlike exuberance and energy and excitement and passion about what was important to me then is still important to me. Yes, we change from when we were 10 and 20 and 30 and 40 and over. We have to. But then there's other things that we never change about ourselves because they are important to us. Now, for me, in this weekend, it was the realization of buying a record on the first day it came out and getting up in the morning and waiting in line and then going to a concert by one of my favorite performers and doing what I have to do to get in that one spot that I wanted to be in at that same time, at that exact time that I wanted to be. And I did it with the same conviction and the same energy and the same passion that I did it when I was 15. And while it seemed crazy and it seemed like grow up, I'm happy to say there's a part of me that has grown up. Yes, there's no question. I'm not the same person I was, but there are other aspects of me that I have retained. Those passionate things. Those things that make me excited, that I started as a young kid, and those passions are still burning hot and bright within me, and I'm glad for it. So sometimes we say old habits die hard, and that's a negative thing. But in my case, in a weekend, 2 days in a row, on a Saturday and Sunday, not only did I learn that old habits die hard, but I was grateful that they do. And I hope that these habits are with me as long as I'm around. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. You're loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 415. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.